This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9.
Oh, too right.
That's right. You're tuned in to Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. But I just want to say it's great to have Dean Beck back in the studios.
Oh, isn't it? Those dulcet tones.
Hearing him on the line from 7 p.m. every Tuesday from here on in, yeah?
Oh, who's going to miss that?
I won't, that's for sure. And I kind of like the bit of crossover in the studio thing that we get with Dean.
Yeah, I do too. Nevertheless, right now you're with Kath and Brian for the next hour of Lefty Pinkos. We're going to have a fabulous night interviewing... You say his name.
Kenton Miller. We've got Kenton Miller in the studios this week. And I guess there was a bit of a theme with that music. Kenton's from Adelaide, like Sia.
Yep.
And so we're going to play a bit of Sia throughout the evening.
From lovely.
Until 9 p.m. here with Kenton. But Kenton's like a comic book artist, an illustrator, a queer activist from, I guess, long, long time ago, basically.
Not that long, Brian.
Let's not air. Like, his mic's not on, but I could say whatever I want here, actually.
Just the other day, really.
How would I say this diplomatically? He's an older, seasoned, most wonderful activist. He's
actually,
a mentor.
I think he's younger than me. But anyway, moving right along.
Queer sort of activism scene. And
he's very well known across Australia.
That's right.
In fact, just today when I mentioned on Facebook that I was going to be talking to him, Joe Harrison from Adelaide said, oh, it'll be nice to him, as if we would be anything else but nice. His day job is with the Human Rights Commission, but I think he really likes his illustration. So we're going to be talking to Kenton until 9, playing some groovy tracks in the meantime.
Yes. And speaking of groovy tracks, I'm going to play some more Sia. Here's a little bit of Bring Night now that the evening has fallen. So, we'll be back to chat to Kenton after this track.
More of your favourite shows.
Joy 94.9.
Oh, that's that hard end.
That
you know
is.
When they do that and you have to kind of jump in? Because the only crime on radio is dead air. Yeah. 8 past 8 here on Joy 94.9. You're with Kath and Brian. And we're very pleased to have in the studio with us tonight Kenton. I like his middle name. It's Penley. Kenton Penley.
Yes. Kenton,
I always
Kenton
sort of throw
Miller.
That in. Miller.
Yep.
Hey. Hi, Kenton.
Howdy, hi.
Hey. Now, born in Adelaide.
Yep. It's, when I came over here, I'd say to people, it's just behind Ballarat and Bendigo on the social register in Victoria.
Sorry. Yes. All right. That's good. Now, you were saying, though, that Adelaide was a very significant place to start your life as an activist. Well, can you talk a bit about that story?
One of the things, when you tell people in Victoria you're from Adelaide, they say, oh, you're the place where they had all those murders and strange murders and stuff. Let me tell you, people in Melbourne, once you shot dead a vampire prostitute in the streets, you lost the right to talk about weird murders.
Wow. Okay, that is pretty good.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, the story lingers. And why?
Well, back in the day, and Bri's right, I've been around for a little bit, so back in the 80s, predating most of the listeners, there were a series of deaths in Adelaide that were linked by the media and said to be caused by this so-called gang called The Family. They named them on 60 Minutes.
Named actual people?
No, they named
Family. Sorry,
The collective. They had, in fact, arrested one person, and they linked that he was one of a member of a gang, and one of the premises was that he wouldn't have been able to lure anyone into the cars by himself to drag these people off to their death. So he must have been working with others.
Right, who were presumably also gay men, as the case may be.
And the whole rumour was built that there was a series of gay men who were killers whose identities and rights were protected by highly placed homosexuals.
Huh.
In fact, the rumours, Adelaide's a great place for rumours. So,
right.
On one radio show they interviewed me, they said, we've actually checked out every rumour and there's 246 members of the gang, including Dame Roma Mitchell at that stage. So
oh, wow. Okay.
It was all tied back into Don Dunstan destroying the pink files when he said to police, you can't collect information on gay men because they're decriminalised, and that was seen as part of a cover-up. What I found, just as a young man at the time, by going through a few years' worth of newspaper articles, and it wasn't done online then, it was just cutting and pasting. And
what?
You know,
how was that done?
Well, you've seen the Flintstones. I used a pterodactyl's beak, you know. And what I found on the public record was there was nothing to link all five deaths, that it was completely random and based on one or two police who'd spoken out of turn to create this whole myth.
Which had obviously caught on.
Oh, far too well. And in fact, the silliness was that when we outed it in the media as being a contrivance, one of the things the media focused on was that the family hadn't been called the family until it was named on the 60 Minutes show. Here's, picture this as a snippet in time. 60 Minutes had already designed the graphic in the background. So they were speaking to Detective Sergeant Trevor Kipling and interviewing him, and they kept asking variations on a question. So you'd say they'd worked together. You'd say they kind of were really close. You'd say they were kind of a
collective.
And apparently
kind of thing, yeah.
It took like 45 minutes before he said,
"Yeah, I reckon you'd call them a family."
And that caught on.
And the name was born.
That's
yeah?
it.
So it was like a twisted, psychopathic sort of gay family that was supported by those high up in government. But how did you break this myth?
Well, just good old-fashioned diligence. And I spoke to I had a couple of mates, because one should always keep older and younger friends. And I had a couple of older friends who were activists who helped me put it together in an article. And it came out in Outrage magazine, which was the DNA of its time. So
yes,
it was,
yes.
And that sold out. And then it became it's a history paper published in the Australian Homosexual Histories Archives and everything. And
oh, wow.
Non-stop media. Non-stop media.
And you were 19.
Yeah. I had 20 minutes notice for the first time that I had to speak on, was it Darren Hinch? One of those, yeah.
Oh.
You just had 20 minutes to prepare, yeah?
Yeah. That, wow. Oh, by the way, you're going to be talking to the media.
Oh.
And they decided because I was young and pretty. And, you know.
And you're pretty good on the mic now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, charmed.
And that was the beginning of your career as an activist.
Yeah. And we formed this is so long ago that we were Gay Community Action. You know how people complain about LGBTI?
Yeah.
This was just the GER. And I can remember we had a special community meeting a couple of years later to make it Lesbian and Gay Community Action. We had to calm down a couple of the blokes that was actually okay to have the Sheilas involved, you know.
Yeah, because those lesbians will take over as soon as you get them.
It was the men who insisted that we put lesbian first as a way of combating the invisibility.
Goodness me. Mm-hmm.
So that's always nice. And it's the thing we'll talk about later on with the letters and the drawing and everything. It's interesting with Tony Briffers because Tony refers to GLBTI, and I've actually drawn LGBTI because that was...
Well, that's what the Americans do. In fact, it's what the rest of the world does, is the LGBTIQ.
Well, it's only sensible. And see, you picked my main point of reference for overseas activism is Vashi Vaid from America. So lots of her stuff has influenced the work that I've done.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
So that must be why I'm L first.
So Brian wants to speak.
I just want to say we've got to play some announcements before we get really into Kenton Miller here on Joy 94.9. You're tuned into Lefty Pinkos. We'll be back after these short announcements.
Joy 94.9.
Mm-mm. So you're from Adelaide, not unlike our guest Kenton Miller.
Well, she's a bit unlike me. You know, much easier on the eye she is. Not that we objectify or anything.
I think you're both beautiful and you're both from Adelaide. So
get a room, guys.
Damn, you're a hippie.
Anyway, moving right along, it is 20 past 8 here in Lefty Pinkos on Joy, where we're talking to Kenton Miller, who's got a kind of straight job and he's got a really kind of creative bent job at the same time, which is the sort of lifestyle that everyone wants. But going back to the beginnings there, Kenton started out as a sort of accidental activist, he calls himself, back in Adelaide when he was just 19 years old. Now, you got, I guess you got rewards for that. You saw something really happen, you know, when you did the research about the supposed family. So after that, where did you go to next? What happened next?
Mm. Well, I always wanted to do the creative stuff. So one of the other things that happens is if you come from, well, can I call Adelaide a small town? The rest of Australia kind
sure,
of
sure, because you're
it
in
like
Melbourne.
That.
If yeah. you're in Adelaide, it wouldn't be a good idea.
Yeah, but if you come from a place like that, your wings get clipped a tiny bit and you get limited opportunity. So because Outrage was published out of Melbourne, I submitted some cartoons. I wanted to be a cartoonist. And back then, the only cartoonists, gay cartoonists, were American.
Yeah. Adam and Steve, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I remember that in...
They were in Sydney Star Observer.
Yes.
In fact, there was a lovely moment when I booked into a hotel in the late 80s and someone recognised me and said, "Oh, you're that cartoonist?" I said, "Yeah." And I was, "Oh, this is great and lovely thing." And he said, "I read Adam and Steve all the time."
Oh, and it wasn't yours.
Anyway.
Can I have a better room now? Thanks. Yeah.
Why did you want to be a cartoonist? This is sort of quite a... I guess it is part of activism in a way. But
I've drawn since I was about two.
Ah.
So for me, I draw every day, and if I don't, my head implodes, you know. So it's just common sense. And for me, it's kind of Look, there was a historian, Humphrey McQueen, who once asked me, do you see the world as a cartoonist? Is that how you look at life? Because you get photographers, they look at life as if everything's a photograph and frame it up. And yes, and often I'll say the most inappropriate thing, my only excuse is trapped in the body of a cartoonist. I
Not bad.
Can't help it. I just see things in that bent and twisted kind of way. Which was the name of one of my cartoon series. The longest running cartoon strip I did was called Bent at the Knees, which was published on the inside back cover of Outrage for about 5 years. Yeah.
Wow. And did you bring the activism to the cartoons?
I kind of did, and in a couple of different ways. In fact, I'm going to be presenting at the Homosexual Histories Conference later in the year. I just got confirmation of that. And I'm going to be presenting a paper about the fact that when I started cartooning was when AIDS first got discovered, back in the days when HIV was HTLV-3.
Yep.
And the editor wrote and said, this is really not a subject for humour. Please avoid. So, of course, nearly every cartoon was about HIV/AIDS, and because it's what we were living with. We were losing friends and, you know, gay family members, and whole cliques were shutting down, especially in a place like Adelaide where a group of friends would fall into bed with each other. It meant that you lost a whole clique of friends as well as entire venues and things. So humour was kind of necessity.
And comics and illustrations facilitate that, do you think? Like, I mean, it lessens the blow when it comes to that kind of, I guess, hard issues, isn't that, yeah?
Look, a very dark sense of humour, unfortunately, stained for life with that. But I look back and it's such a capturing of the time, because one of the first cartoons I did had two gay men on the end of a bed holding up a condom, one saying to the other, oh, just makes me feel so heterosexual. Which is what it did back then.
That's so cute.
Yeah. And some of those cartoons are really locked in time. They make no sense unless you were there at the time. Like one of them said, it was easy to get rid of him. I just said yes, but with an American accent. And that's because back then the myth was you could, if you didn't sleep with Americans, you wouldn't catch it.
Wow.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you've been involved with, like, the Niche Idaho. Like, Niche is an acronym, as is Idaho. Do you want to just explain to our listeners what Niche stands for?
The National Institute of Challenging Homophobia Education, the brainchild of Wunderkind. Yeah, Daniel Whithouse. People might recognise him from such previous ventures.
I don't know Daniel. I'd like to ask, what's... Tell us about Daniel and what's he get into?
Well, he's a Virgo.
Yep. Okay. Well, that's
enough said. Okay.
No, in a nutshell.
Just outed you, Daniel. No, look, when I first met Daniel was way back when he was a youngling and part of the National Outlink, which the Human Rights Commission, the Australian one, had organised back then. And my good mate Mahamati and I had done a couple of challenging homophobia training kits.
Yep.
And he was part of a clique of young people who were getting together, working, and he was in Victoria and Geelong at the time. And Daniel grew from that to develop the Pride and Prejudice training kit, which trains up students and teachers to work with students. And so he's done a lot of challenging homophobia work and become a good friend. And somewhere along the way, he said, what we really need to do is we keep losing the history of all these. We hear things announced as a new campaign and we miss what we've developed so far. And we need to bring everything together because we've got lots of learnings over all these years of doing challenging homophobia work, both with external people, straight people. Some of our best friends are straight people. But we do a lot of work with internalised homophobia too, and that wonderful horizontal hostility that our community sometimes falls prey.
As they call it.
Your mob does.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's like transcends culture and goes through to sexuality and gender. But I mean, so Niche is, and Idaho's like the International Day of.
Day Against Homophobia.
Yep.
And that's something, well, you just think Idaho, you think American, but it's actually worldwide. Yeah. And this year what Daniel had done is last year he'd self-funded himself to travel around Australia and to collect stories as well as run challenging homophobia education. So he came back to me and said, look, you can do the drawing. My mate Jono, Jonathan Duffy, is great with the camera. If I get you together, if we can make these stories into scripts, we could do one for every letter for the LGBT.
And if
everyone's a personal story, that kind of gives a personal perspective and explains what the experience is like for people who live outside of those letters.
That's a beautiful, amazing project. I mean, I saw some of the stuff or some of the videos on YouTube and on Facebook, as we are prone to do these days. But, like, they're an amazing
video, and like your work in the Kenton is phenomenal. But what I'm going to do is actually play. I asked you what's your favourite of the videos, or what's your favourite letter.
I shouldn't admit that because everyone's
there's no favourites. No, yeah, but like, which one do you like most, then, Kenton?
Everyone's got a different favourite, and I'm really thrilled because if the question was what's my favourite, I'd probably have to go with the transgender. But that's two stories together, and I thought we won't have the airplay for doing both of those together. L, I just love because it got us kick-started and it really seems to resonate with people.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
Well, I'm going to play L, and it's a story about Minnie. Here she is.
I was in primary school, and I can remember this dream I had about my music teacher. I had a huge crush on her. In my dream, I had her baby and I was breastfeeding it. Sounds really weird, I know, but I guess I've always known. When I was 15, I had a best friend and I was totally in love with her. We used to wag school and steal her mum's wine. One day, both of us went down to the beach and started talking under the pier. She was complaining and complaining about her boyfriend until finally I said to her, "If you keep whinging about him, I'm going to kiss you." So she kept complaining and complaining, and well, all these passers-by were soon watching us two girls in school uniforms kissing passionately on the beach beside a bottle of wine. It was freaking awesome. I told everyone at school I'd shed my first kiss, but I was afraid of how they'd react, so I changed her name to a boy's. I was getting a lot of abuse as a young lesbian. I tried to laugh things off, you know, keep it light, but it got to me. I didn't feel safe. One night, I was quite drunk when I finally confessed to my mum that I was a lesbian. Mum reassured me saying, "You know what, love? I still love you." I still hold on to that. Dad's a different story, though. He still thinks it's some kind of phase. My nan, I love her. She was on and on and on at me to go on Facebook, and finally I joined up. Then she looked at my page and saw that I'd join an online gay group, so she rang my mum. She asked my mum, "Is Minnie gay?" My mum says, "Yes." And in the background, my dad yells out, "She thinks she's gay." So my nan sent me a Facebook message that just said, "I love you." I wrote back, "I love you too. I'm sorry, Nan." Then my nan wrote back again, "You have nothing to be sorry about." I cried. My family's here, my friends are here, my life is here. Of course I'm going to be staying in the town I live in. I know the stereotype says that all of us LGBTQI people are destined to move away to a larger city the first chance we get, but not me. I love it here. It's where I'm from and it's where I'm staying.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Yeah, it's 8:30 and you're with us here in the hot seats for Lefty Pinkos. We're talking to Kenton Miller and we've been talking about these various projects he's worked on, including the Niche Idaho Your Story series. You just heard one there, which was the letter L, and you can go check them out on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Nothing like cartoons on radio, built for the medium.
I think the narrative behind them, like you kind of, there's a nice little soundtrack pondering along in the background, and the narrative is what it's about. I mean, yeah, it works well, I think.
Soundtrack's great, and we should acknowledge Emma Gibbs, who did a fabulous job on the voice there too. Mm. And Jonathan Duffy's camera work, magnificent.
Were they read by the real people, or were they kind of just voiceovers?
Now, because we did a range of letters, there are two of them that were read by the actual people. Yep. And that placed a bit of extra pressure on me because what I then did was draw the actual people. Okay. So for the rest, I could just do crazy and make faces up and everything.
Nana's got blue hair here. And
oh, yippee-ki-yo. She can wear floral frocks and no one's going to say, "I don't have that dress sense," you know. But with the female-to-male transgender story, which is Archie, the person who that's based upon did the voice reading, and it was only when we were about to sit down that Daniel said to me, "Oh, by the way, I've got Blair doing the reading for this." And I went, "I've not met Blair." He said, "Yeah, but it's okay, he's just going to do the voice." I said, "Well, what's he look like?" And he said, "Oh, I'm his friend on Facebook." So we called up all his Facebook photos, and I went, and captured him and then just drew it straight away. Whereas even more pressure with the I letter, because Tony Briff has been a mate of mine for years.
Huh.
And I was just like, holy crap, how am I going to be able to draw Tony so that Tony doesn't punch me in the face?
Yeah, yeah.
And how does Tony feel about it? Has he seen them and responded to them?
Look, and she's thrilled, and he's contacted me and said, can I buy the artwork? And no, you're doing the right thing, because I've had to work with Tony on the panel. And one of the things we negotiated was that because Tony is neither fully male or fully female,
I
swap pronouns every time.
Oh, well done.
So what I can say is that Tony, he used to be the mayor of Hobson's Bay. She's now a councillor.
Yeah.
She's happy. Well, happier than when she was.
And what's the response been generally to the Your Story campaign? Like,
oh, look, we've been thrilled. Yeah. Like, Daniel's vision for it took off way beyond what the rest of us thought was, well, what we thought was possible. Daniel thought it was possible to film them all in a single day. Jono and I go, that was a nice one.
Youthful hubris.
Jono said to me, do you notice how we kind of didn't tell him that wasn't possible? We just went ahead and showed him how long each one took. But I think it was his vision that these would really click with people. And the first time we got back an email from Strasbourg saying we're going to use this to introduce the youth forum at the international thing so that we can encourage their stories. And then when it turned up when we got an email saying, this is Huffington Post, would you mind if we put them out there? It's kind of like,
what do you say to Huffington? Yeah, like,
oh, would we? Yeah. and I think that was important too, because the one they chose, although they've linked into all of them, was intersex. And for us, that was great, because when we saved putting that on so that we could post it right after Australia became the first country in the world to offer federal protection to intersex people. Now, because my day job, I train people in human rights. If I'm talking to, say, a group of depot workers in the council at 7 o'clock in the morning and I talk about intersex, I get the, oh, yeah, we're all intersex here, mate. Don't worry.
I think you've heard that a few times.
I think I've heard it all for every time.
Yeah, you smile and nod and move on.
So original. Except I'm using my depot voice when I'm talking to them. And it's out there because people know it, but they don't know it. And that was the one we made a couple of choices to be distinctive with. And one was that we would actually educate, we'd actually offer a bit of a definition so that we wouldn't assume that anyone going into it would be across it. Been interesting for me with close gay male friends who've loved the lesbian one, but they loved the gay one, and they found the bisexual one interesting. They really relate to the bit in that where the guy says he watched Queer as Folk with his bedroom door shut,
like under the covers,
kind of thing, expected to be sprung. Mm. And if it was Jono and Daniel here, they'd tell you that each retake, because we drew them a few times over, his sheet on his bed crept back more and more until you got to see his full naked ass by the time we.
Yep. Yep.
Nice. And but then I had different friends say, oh, that transgender one, that was really an education for me. I didn't know that. Particularly for gay men who'd never encountered someone who is female to male transgender.
Mm.
And then by the time intersex happened, it was like, well, this is so far out of my experience. But that's good. Yeah.
Mm. And in effect, I guess what the series is all about is kind of, you know, opening people's eyes to stuff in that very entertaining, approachable kind of way.
Oh, and their hearts too. Mm. That's what I love.
We both, Brian and I both sort
melted.
During the lesbian story. Wow, so gorgeous.
Yeah.
Now, you came to Melbourne 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So you're a late arrival, really.
I am, yes.
And what brought you over here?
Work. There were jobs going here that they weren't in Adelaide with a bit more money and things like that. But it was also, I used to describe it, and it's still consistently true, it's a bigger playground. Melbourne is a bigger version of Adelaide. It's not a smaller version of Sydney. Three degrees of separation. I could sidle up to someone and say, so do you know him? And they'd say, no, but I know someone who knows him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Adelaide, you just sort of sneak out the bed in the morning, make a single phone call and say, did I make a mistake? You know? It's just too close for comfort, really. Not that we do that sort of thing these days. But I got involved again with activism here with the Victorian...
What's there been a gap? You stopped being an activist?
Well, no, I meant that when I came across here, I started working in HIV/AIDS and I thought, this is lovely, but actually not quite coalitionist enough for me.
Yep.
Mm.
So I thought, what's a coalitionist group I can get involved with so I can get to play nicely with others? And the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby was there. So I got to be the, I got to work for them as a volunteer. And then after a couple of meetings, they said, oh, you've done media stuff. You don't mind being the male co-convener, do you? So
wow.
I became the co-convener for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting times. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, that's how Sally Goldner knows you.
Yes.
Because when we interviewed Sally, she said, we were talking about kind of mentoring people, and she said you were a very generous, open-hearted sort of person, always welcoming in younger, older, in between, you know, because some people can just want their own turf with people that look just like them. Yeah. And she was sort of saying, no, you were the, one of these people who really facilitated education across, you know, across the age gap and, you know, different groups and stuff.
Well, see, I don't see love or power as a finite resource. How, now I'm getting all hippie on you.
Mm. Yeah, it's great. I love
but
it.
But I think the more you share, the more it grows. Mm. And some people treat power as if you give something away, you've lost something. Mm. And Sal was great. And we met as pals and mates and then worked together so that we could start up Transgender Victoria. So when I was on the rights lobby then, we helped start up TGV and negotiated. And it was at a time when we were introducing gender identity and sexual orientation as protected attributes. And back in that day, that was intriguing times because this was 2001 and these weren't protected attributes under the Equal Opportunity Law. And at the same time, nor was breastfeeding. And so we heard word back from the ALP party room. Oh, see, this is one of my lines. History is proof that good gossip never dates.
Mm, okay. Mm, nice.
So here we are across time, and we heard word back from the ALP party room that they were trying to separate breastfeeding out from sexual orientation because they were worried that we wouldn't get across, that we'd drag them down. And I said quite firmly, we are not letting go of those breasts. We
yeah, are, lovely.
We are clinging to them. which was a challenge.
And the strategy worked?
It did, because some folk were saying, oh, it's the ALP, we can't offend them. And I was like, well, actually we managed to cause the first fight in the new BRACS government. That was intriguing.
Oh, lovely.
Because they had as part of their platform that they would fully support assisted reproductive technology and gay adoption. And very much the Attorney General at that time, Rob Hulls, that was part of his outlook. But the Premier at that time, like, we launched a report called Enough is Enough, which tracked all of the discrimination and violence that happened to gay, lesbian and transgender people. And
that must have been a weighty document.
Oh, it was. And we fought hard to get transgender included at that stage because we knew the crimes against them far outweighed
the
crimes
others,
against
yeah.
the others. And they media interviewed Rob Hulls and said, so you're going to do all this? You're going to get it all? He said, yep, even the gay adoption, yep. They raced across town to a basketball court and interviewed Steve Brax and said, so your government supports gay adoption and access to IVF for lesbians? He said, no.
Really?
So the spin they put on it the next day was Rob Hulls saying, no, 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 of course, what the Premier says is right, not in our first term of government. That's what he meant.
Oh.
And so it's still policy, but it's something we're going to lead up to. And we got dragged in by another politician who's very friendly to the community, who we won't name, except how can we de-identify him? He used to wear red Speedos and march at Pride March. That's enough de-identification. And Ruth McNair, who was then the head of Assisted Reproductive Technology, ART, and I was the head of the rights lobby. We didn't have a female co-convener. We went and met with Mr. Thwaites, who at that time, oh, damn, there's that de-identification out the window.
Oh, never mind. Oh,
damn,
and
the red Speedos.
Absolutely spat the dummy. We've given you everything and you people have done this and thrown it back in our faces.
Really?
And we said, we haven't thrown anything back. It's your own party not being across its own policies. Yeah.
And making promises they weren't then prepared to keep.
Well, it was a learning curve for me because the activism I had in South Australia was, sad to say, pretty much another body's discovered in the parkland, someone bashed to death, talking to the media about it. And across here it was suddenly having lunches with politicians and trying to get laws changed.
Yep.
Well, that's really interesting. So you're suddenly in the big league.
I guess. And smiling and thinking, one day I'm going to buy a suit. One day.
You're listening to Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. We're chatting to Kenton Miller and we'll be back to talk some more after these announcements.
Joy 94.9.
You're here on Joy 94.9, Lefty Mellow. Pinkers. It was lovely in Mellow, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was singing along.
Gary Jones with Gary Jules with Mad World. Why'd you pick that track, Kenton?
I thought you were going to say, why didn't you pick something by Howard Jones? Why'd I pick it? Look, I love Donnie Darko, the film, for starters, but I love the original of that, and I just love that interpretation of it. I think it's taken it to a nice dark place.
Mm.
Not that, you know, it wasn't dark already with the line, the dreams in which I'm dying are the best of it.
Yes.
Now, there's a great example of misheard lyrics. I connected with a young man who was over here from South Africa, and we both went, oh, it's my favourite song. And then he went back and we wrote each other letters, which is what you did in the days before email.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he sent me the lyrics. And I'd always thought it was, the dreams of which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I was thinking, you work for your dreams, they kill you. It's like, no, the dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had.
Oh. And that just flipped the song around for you.
Well, particularly as he was writing to me from an asylum at the time, and I was thinking, okay, you know
how to
beckon.
What happens to you if you keep listening to the song? It's just after 8:45 here on Lefty Pinkos. You're on Joy, of course, with Kath and Brian, and in the hot seat tonight, Kenton Miller, the Human Rights Commissioner person. No, not the Human Rights Commissioner.
Oh, no, he's not a commissioner.
He works for the Human Rights Commission. But really, his passion is his cartoons, which he's been doing for decades now.
Yeah, it is.
What is the best cartoon you've ever done?
Look, it's never been published.
Oh.
But it's my absolute favourite I've ever done was a sequence of frames which were about Batman, the Pope and Mother Teresa getting drunk together. Right.
Wow.
I just let myself, it was a real trippy little riff I had with myself, a jam session, and, you know, Mother Teresa pulling off a nun's habit and making a Batman cow out of it and saying, look at me, who am I?
It was just a bunch of fun.
I've got to find it. I know it's somewhere in my archives.
It sounds like a kind of something that's haunted you for years. Maybe we should get it published. Yeah. You know, get it out there.
Look, what are your archives like, Kenton, on that note? Like, I mean, do you have...
Have you got, like, piles?
Of papers
Ask
and piles
Nick
and
Henderson. Fire. Nick Henderson, that charming young man from the Australian Lesbian and Gay History Archives who keeps saying, Kenton, I found another one of your cartoons, which is magnificent.
We should digitise them, shouldn't we?
Well, he's quite willing to do it. There were a whole bunch that were just ditched. They went down in a satellite crash.
What do you mean by that?
When Outrage got taken over by a group called Satellite Media,
and when
they went bankrupt... They threw out a whole range of photographs, cartoons, illustrations.
That's evil.
Totally evil. So there's little remnants of that pop up every now and again.
Wow.
And I get an email from Nick saying, woo, look at this. And often he'll post pictures. I think, oh, crap, I forgot about doing that Splash of Pink Day poster back then, or the a few ones advertising Dancers for Normal, the national organisation for the Reform of Marijuana League. Because it used to be a little bit, you know, left of... centre back in the day, campaign against nuclear energy.
Oh, well, he's done it all.
Yeah.
He's done it all.
Carols by Confinement for the Prisoners Action Group, the Philippine Action Support Group, Street Theatre. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those were the days.
It does bring back memories. I worked in community radio in Sydney during the 80s and we were total anarchists and working with all those groups, you know, because they were kind of national groups and CISCAC, you know, South America, Solidarity with... Mm. And what was the one in Africa? There was another mob like that.
Yeah.
Malala, all over the place. We're totally into it.
And I was very much at this, well, I just got to stop using the word hippie, but I was with Friends of the Earth a little bit. So one of my cartoon strips back then was called Hello Flower. Yeah. So published regularly.
Sweet.
And it was about a woman who met a talking flower and she changed to transmogrify into a flower herself. There were two sequel strips to it and you'd bump into people and they'd say, oh, I know you from Hello Flower. I know you from Bent at the Knees. And, in fact, my favourite Bent at the Knees story, I will go back into history now.
Yeah, go on.
Drinking at the Albury one night and someone said...
In Sydney?
Do you know who he is? He's that cartoonist, Kenton Penley, because that was my full name back then. And the guy turned around and said, I'll let you have my seat at the bar if you tell me what happens to Douglas. Okay, trade. Yes, there we go.
Wow. So you're quite a star, aren't you?
I have a little badge at home that says, I used to be famous.
No, well, I mean, you're doing interesting work now, Kenton. You're working human rights with the Victorian state body. How is that? Like, I mean, do you love the job? Is it fulfilling?
I do. I feel really, oh, it sounds cornball, doesn't it? I feel really privileged.
No, I mean, really? It's one of those kind of roles, I think, that kind of, yeah, you know.
About 60% of the work I do is doing training with people like people with a disability or their carers or homeless people or new arrivals or anyone who might have been discriminated against about how they can use certain laws as tools mm-hmm. to prevent that or deal with it if it happens. And the other 40%, I get to deal with what we call public authorities, like training the police or court staff or local government mm-hmm. about what their responsibilities are under these laws. And because I'm not a lawyer, I think that works because I have to understand mm. and pull it apart.
Yeah. From a lay person's perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, because lawyers, you know, some of my best friends are, but mm-hmm. They can be a little bit like mechanics, where when you ask them to explain something, you end up feeling like you know less afterwards than you did before.
Yeah.
I say that coming from a long line of mechanics, overhead comb shaft, it's just not. But I love it because I also use the cartoons in that. So if I'm doing, for example, a group with a group of young women who've got intellectual disabilities, I'll use the whiteboard. I'll draw a young woman on the board. Let's give her a name, and then we can take her through.
Oh, they would love that.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like a really good educational tool.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to turn into stories, turn into characters.
Yeah, and they get to own it. It's exciting for them. They get to shape it, and I get to draw a put a tram there and create a super stop with the magic of whiteboard markers. And it's a bunch of fun. You can't see how much I'm waving my hands around here on radio, but I am.
Mm. You're very expressive, yes. Mm.
And where do you see, like, ideally, where would you like your career to go? You know, what would you like to do next?
Mm.
Or do you just want the same thing to go on?
Well, I like being jack of all trades and master of half a dozen. Mm. I must admit, I get a bit of a buzz standing in front of a group and communicating because I'm quite shy otherwise. And yet I'd love a balanced life where I was paid for drawing, paid for writing, because I've done a few scripts and writing and things like that, and also just get to do the education too. So I just want it all, really. That's not much to ask, is it?
I think I can understand that desire there to have your artistic work be your main source of income, because it probably is the thing that gives you most pleasure, yeah?
But you also don't want it to become a rod for your back where, I have
the
to
routine.
Do this or, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've done an awful lot of, I was going to say gay for pay. What I was meaning was I've done an awful lot of where I've been hired to draw things for meeting other people's requirements.
Right.
It leads you down some fairly crazy paths. You know, I can remember doing illustrations for a port in a childcare centre, and I drew the front cover and I drew all the women who are in the centre. You know, I thought, they'll love this. It's them. And they came back and said, you can't do that. We're trying to attract funding with this document. You've got to make us look thinner. You can't put us in overalls. You can't have that hairstyle. It's got to be, you know. So you want socialist realism, not social realism. Right.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So, okay. Mm.
And you've done a lot of mentoring, Kenton. I mean, why do you do that? Why do you get into, like, I guess, bringing people in and...
Well, look, it's its own reward.
From you, yeah.
I mean, look at this with Daniel. By Daniel getting me involved in this project, it's proven his life any old dame yet. but it gave me a great project to work with that I really enjoyed. It put me back in touch with working to a deadline on a fixed something. Mm-hmm. I got to bring some great stories to life and have made connections and friends through it. And that was all from having a conversation when Daniel came up to me gooby-eyed at the end of a session at a conference and went, oh, you're so fantastic. And I was like, you know, chill. It's all right. Yeah. You'll be doing this too one day. And he did, and he was. So I think that what you invest, you get back. You're in bucket loads, really.
Yeah. And anyone out there you're working with at the moment that's sort of been an up-and-comer? Or?
Look, I think through this project, we've formed some good new friendships where we're really clear that we want to work together on other things. And every day something new lands in the inbox. I won't mention today's email, but that was pretty exciting. Wasn't it, Daniel, if you're out there in radio land? I read that, went through to the link of this person's other work that they said, I'd love you to use this. And I went, that'd be good. So I think the best of work breeds other good work. But we're smart and clever enough not to just say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to sound rude, but when someone comes up and says, I love what you did, you should do my story. And then you get cornered in the pub for 15 minutes and go, yep, well,
the narrative. And, yep.
You know, the goal of this was to try and get others to tell their own story through whatever it means. And we've got great tools out there that anyone can use. I want to see someone use Ken and Barbie dolls and, you know, radicalise the whole thing and, you know, use them to tell their story. You can saw an arm off or two and make
not?
It work.
Yeah, make it look cool.
Yeah, that's
fantastic. Well, it's been a damn pleasure having you in here, Kenton, and we thank you for your time.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure being had.
Yeah.
So no one can see what really goes on in this Lefty Pinko studio. But we're getting to the end of the show.
Yeah, we have to wrap things up and hand over to the stand up straight.
That's right.
And be sure to stick around. Lefty Pinko's every Tuesday at 8 PM here on Joy 94.9.
Download Joy's free iPhone app, joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.